This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Jack, welcome in to the show, man. Welcome to the A. We're excited to have you. Seventh round pick for our Atlanta Falcons out of Wisconsin. First of all, I got to ask you this, man. Is Wisconsin the party school that everybody says it is? My daughter had a chance to get in there, and we went up for a visit, and we left, and I said, you can't go here. Is it crazy, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely pretty fun.
It is.
It's definitely pretty fun.
You had a good time there. You had a great career in Wisconsin. Talk to us about this journey for yourself, man. I know your family, football runs deep.
Yeah. I played at Wisconsin with my younger brother. He's on the team there still. My dad played at Wisconsin. All of them played O-line. And, football just kind of runs real deep. I got three younger brothers. They all play football. And so to kind of be here is a dream come true.
From Madtown, from Madison, man. Yeah, talking with our newest Falcon, Jack Nelson. The process, man, with the combine, did you anticipate you'd go where you went?
I think I didn't really have a great idea. I strained my hamstring right before the Senior Bowl, so that was a little disappointing. I was a little disappointed I couldn't show off, what I could do at the Senior Bowl and, doing some of the combine testing. But regardless of that, all I need was the opportunity, and I got it. So I'm real thrilled about that.
Guys, he's big. 6'7", 312 pounds. At least that's what they list you as, Jack. We talk a lot about big hands and the length of these guys that play your position. What do you say about all of that stuff? The measuring and the hand size, because they talk about tackles and keeping these edge rushers off the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you can't have some, 15-inch arms or something like that. But when they start splitting hairs, talking about, quarter of an inch, this, that, I don't think it really makes that big of a difference.
Right. Now, man, look, all we know is we think of, the Big Ten, Jack, and Wisconsin, we just figure you're a mauler. We figure you're a guy that used to beat up your brother, or tried to, and just wants to beat up people. Is that true?
That's absolutely true.
How tough, by the way, what is Wisconsin practice like? I mean, because, every in the SEC, every region thinks they got the best, toughest guys. But what was it like playing in the Big Ten?
Practices were tough. There was definitely some grinder practices, especially when Coach Fickell came in there. Mm-hmm. It was a real trying to test your toughness, but, only made us better. I think it's prepared me well for what's to come.
Jack Nelson joining us here on the show, guys, introducing you to all of our new rookies as rookie camp is opened up this week up at Flowery Branch. What about, the strengths of your game? We know Wisconsin traditionally has always had a pretty good run game. I see you, and I've heard from scouts that you're a great run blocker. What do you think the strengths are of your game?
I would agree with that. I think I'm pretty good on the backside of zone stuff, especially cutting off on those backside plays. I think my quickness and my lateral agility really helps me out there. So I would definitely have to agree with that. I'm really excited for this offense.
Mm. As we mentioned, guys, you heard from Jack. His brother Todd played, and his dad Nelson played at Wisconsin. I saw a photo on from your Wikipedia page. Your dad looks like he can still lace him up right now.
Yeah, yeah, he certainly likes to get after it in the weight room, but you know, he's definitely getting a little long in the tooth.
Is he the guy that would get you guys up? Let's go, son! Get you in the weight room early. Was he that guy?
Oh yeah, yeah. My dad's definitely a really intense individual. Yeah. He's real intense dude. That's for sure.
No, I'm looking at the photo, Carl. I mean, he's going to burst right out of the screen at you. Again, guys, we're talking about one of our newest Atlanta Falcons. Jack Nelson here is with us. And again, we've been asking all the guys that got drafted, not knowing, as you said, after the combine because you were banged up. How did you spend that weekend? When did you get the phone call? What was that like?
I mean, it was definitely a really stressful time. You know, like I said, just a lot of uncertainty. But, you know, we decided to have spend the draft at at this local bar that we're family friends with the owner in Madison. So we had my family, a couple of close friends, and, you know, a lot of guys from the team from Wisconsin, the whole line was there. So it was pretty cool. And when I finally got that call, you know, to be surrounded with my best friends, my family, it was definitely something special for sure.
So real estate and urban land economics, what is that, Jack? I mean, what are you going to be, a mogul?
I mean, I just knew if I was going to get my degree paid for, I wanted to, you know, make it worth it and not do right. some kind of, you know, communications or some kind of cop out. So, yeah, but that being said, I mean, it was the easiest degree in the business school, so I went with that one.
All right, I was going to say, apparently, Carl, there was no geology. Rocks for jocks at Wisconsin.
When I
right?
saw that, I was like, impressive. Yeah. And by the way, I'm being serious here. He is an academic All-American while he was at Wisconsin, so Jack is all about it. Hey, man, what do you think about the Falcons? What were your perceptions? I don't know if you had any before you got here. And did you ever watch any of these games, and did you see Michael Penix last year, or did you watch any of this squad?
To be honest, not much. You know, prior to this, you know, my life was kind of just dominated by college football,
sure.
Obviously. But the only thing I really knew about the Falcons was, you know, it was down south. And, you know, I've never really been down there, so excited to be here. Definitely a new experience, great people so far, and I'm real thrilled, looking forward.
Outstanding. We got a coach. It'd be interesting. Everybody who gets to meet Coach Raheem Morris for the first time, I mean, he's a real energetic personality. So there's almost like a little bit of a college vibe there. Be curious to see how that works out. And I don't know, man, Bijan Robinson and all these weapons and Michael Penix. We got a lot of guys. So looking forward to seeing you out there, man, protecting these dudes.
Absolutely. I'm beyond stoked. Super excited.
Well, we look forward to seeing you, meeting you. And Jack, good luck, man. Welcome to Atlanta, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Good stuff. Football does run through his family, and
right.
you know, those guys, man, they're unique because it's like they never get away from it, Mike. You know, some guys get a chance to go home, and they're the only guy in the family that plays. I mean, his dad, his brother, so they're always talking football. But he is an excellent, at least according to the scouts, run blocker.
Right,
and he talked about that backside zone in this particular scheme, and you know, that's where he excels. Mike, that I think he could be a guy that could have some impact for us, specifically in the run game. Listen, none of these guys are completely polished 100%, but I also think if his pass protection gets better, he's a guy that might end up laying a lot for us.
No, it's just one of those deals where, I mean, I get it. Sometimes you feel like a seventh-round pick is a glorified, undrafted free agent, but as we've seen with Brock Purdy and we've seen with some other guys come in here, I mean, I just think there's an archetype and a body style, just like I think, you know, when we went with Chris Lindstrom out of Boston College, you just know you're going to get some solid play. And so we'll see. Now, obviously, not as high as he wanted to go in the draft, but perhaps, you know, being a little banged up for the Senior Bowl and some of those contributed maybe his stock falling a bit. But I think when you look at the size element, it's like, I mean, I can imagine offensive line coaches on the Falcons, we can fix that if there are things that need fixing.
Yeah, and I think he got hurt in the bowl game,
right?
Which is why that affected his Senior Bowl, you know, situation. Either way, obviously he's over that and healthy, and we're looking forward to seeing what he's got. Look, we got five picks in this draft. We think three are going to be impact, right? For sure. The last two are going to be interesting, and we just had Billy Bowman on from Oklahoma. I think Billy Bowman, guys, is going to get playing time. I don't know how much, but I do think he is. But he's also Jack Nelson. If he comes in, Mike, and you've been concerned about the other side of this
right.
line.
Right, right.
I mean, I don't know. If he finds a way to impress the coaches, maybe he gets some time.
But I will say this. I mean, as much as I get on the front office, they've done a really good job evaluating offensive line pieces from Bergeron and the undrafted or free agents we brought in as depth. I think we've done a pretty good job with O-line. And now the next guy we'll get a chance to talk to in a bit will be Xavier Watts.
All right.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
We host the true crime podcast, Psychopedia.
Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Right now, let's talk to Xavier Watts. And we are excited to visit with our newest safety here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Xavier, third round pick for the Falcons. A lot of people talking about his skill set and what kind of person he is. Xavier Watts, thank you so much for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Man, I'm great. You know, when you look at what you accomplished in college, I said you, to me, come in as the most accomplished player I think we drafted this year. And then I saw this number where you know, one touchdown allowed in 1,147 snaps. And I was like, is that correct? What was the secret, man? Why were you so dominant at your position and played so well at Notre Dame?
I think it's a mixture of, one, the type of player I am. You know, able to, you know, have the mindset of, you know, going out there and make plays and dominate. And then two, I mean, just my teammates have a really good support system. My teammates did their job so I could do my job. And then as well, just the coaches, I had good coaches, I had a good scheme. So
we were surprised you were there where you were and the Falcons move up to get you with the 96th pick. What did you know where you were going after the combine? Where'd you think you were going to go and how excited to be an Atlanta Falcon?
Yeah, I didn't know where I was going to go. I mean, obviously it was a lot of different, you know, news and noise of kind of where the range I was supposed to go. But obviously, you know, when the Falcons called me, I was really excited. I mean, I get to learn from one of the best safeties in the NFL. So, I mean, I'm just really excited to, you know, be on the team in general and then learn from a good safety. So
awesome. Yeah, I and we agree with you. Jess is pretty damn good. Talk to us about the night of, man. I mean, we've been asking all the guys. We had Billy Bowman on and Jack Nelson. You know, your classmates here with the Falcons about the moment and just how that was for you. I mean, where were you at? Was there family around? What was going on?
Yeah, I mean, I was at. I had a family like little party. Had some family up there, some friends, some coaches. But like I said, just getting that call was amazing. I cried. I'm not a big crier, so just getting that call was really emotional. And just being around everybody that had supported me and, you know, has always been there for me, just celebrating that moment with them was a really good moment.
Xavier Watts is with us, guys. As we mentioned, he's a Bronco Nagurski Trophy winner in 23, is the best defensive player in the country. And we talked about how physical Notre Dame was and Coach Freeman, the job he did. Talk about that Sugar Bowl, because you guys really smacked Georgia around at the line. And obviously, you were the defensive player of the game.
He's laughing.
yeah, I mean, we came out there with a mindset to go out there and, you know, kind of dominate Georgia. You know, they had previous success, and you know, coming into that game, there was a lot of smoke in terms of they were going to blow us out, and they were Georgia, they're all big and bad. But you know, we kind of took that to heart and be like, you know, they're playing Notre Dame. I mean, this is not the same Notre Dame team from whatever a long time ago. So I mean, we took that to heart and we went out there and we, you know, proved a lot of people wrong.
Yeah, I mean, that you did, and the physicality showed through. There's no debating that. Xavier, talk about your coach though, Marcus Freeman. Because, you know, we talk about these transitions, and when Brian Kelly left, and everybody's like, oh, what are you going to do? And then Coach Freeman takes over. What's the vibe like? What's it been there? Because obviously you guys are playing at a high level and playing for chips last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when Coach Freeman took over, we already knew kind of what it was. Like, we knew he was going to come in. He was going to do great things. Like, he was the defensive coordinator, so a lot of guys already knew the type of guy he was, the type of coach he was. So we knew he was the right guy for the job. and we just knew he was going to help the program out, turn it around. You know, he made Notre Dame cool. He brought some swag with it, and, you know, a lot of guys really believe in his mission. I mean, he helped a lot of young men become great men and great football players. So, I mean, he's been doing an amazing job.
I remember we talked about it, Xavier, on the radio when you guys made that announcement and the way the reaction in the locker room, everybody just went bananas. So it seemed like it really was heartfelt.
No, yeah, like I said, we've all been around. We were all around him earlier, and we knew he was the guy for the job because, I mean, he truly cares for his players. He's a younger guy. He's got some, like I say, he got some swag with him. But, I mean, he'll get on you. He's a good coach as well. So, I mean, we were all really happy.
What does Xavier Watts like to do outside of football?
I like to golf. I like the ball. I mean, my time off, let's see what. This whole time leading up to here, I was golfing all month a lot. So I like to golf, like the ball. I like to travel. But I'm really chill, laid back type of guy. Don't do too much, but I do a little bit.
How's the golf
things every now and then?
How's the golf game?
It's
like all of
better.
Us. It's golf.
I broke 100 for the first time. What was that? Like two rounds ago.
Okay.
So I mean, I'm getting better, but I got some work to do for sure.
Well, wherever you decide to live, man, I mean, you can't go wrong. There's golf courses everywhere where the Falcons practice, and you'll be set. I often wonder, because we've been to South Bend a few times. What do you do in South Bend for excitement, man? It just seems like it. I know there's a bar scene, but it seems like it's a pretty laid back vibe.
Nah, that's why it was perfect for me. Like I said, I'm really chill and laid back, so all I could focus on was football and school. There's nothing to do in South Bend, not going to lie. so it was perfect. But South Bend's a good city. It's cool. But
right.
Yeah, I hear you. But it's Xavier Watts joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, man. So tell Falcon fans, because, look, everybody's excited about the draft class and getting you guys, you know, in uniform and seeing what this is going to look like. We got a lot of work in front of us. But tell Falcon fans what you're bringing, man. What are you bringing to the squad?
Yeah, I mean, I'm bringing a playmaker to the field, to this organization. I mean, I go out there, I make plays, and I help the team win. So I'm really excited to, you know, get to work and show what I can do.
Well, a lot of folks are stoked because, as you said at the start of the interview, your idea of you and Jesse Bates, I mean, that sounds like there could be something on a T-shirt soon, man. That sounds great.
Yeah, it does.
For sure. No, I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, man. Good luck, and we look forward to seeing you and getting a chance to meet you, Xavier Watts, man. Appreciate you being here, and congratulations again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Mike, pretty interesting dude, man. And when you talk to, like, his high school coaches, who they all these guys have been interviewed, right? And everybody, they talk about how polite and respectful he is and how his teammates adore him and all this stuff. That stuff matters. And, look, we hear this with Terry Fontenot. We heard it last year, maybe 2 years ago, Mike, the kind of guys they want to bring in, right?
Right.
Look, it hasn't translated to a Super Bowl yet, but I do think that when you talk about the kind of guys they're trying to bring into this organization, these are the kind of guys. And if you bring in enough of those guys, Mike, and they're good, they're talented, then eventually, hopefully, it pays off for us.
You know, it's interesting because this guy is a dude that can, you know, play. He played receiver, which is the defense. He got redshirted like so many players during the COVID year. So it's interesting. You're getting a lot of guys, and you see this around the NFL on draft weekend, but he's 23.
Yep.
So you're getting, and it's not a knock on other guys we've drafted, but there is a presence, a maturity, and he was a leader, as you said, Carl, on that team. So it's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know anybody who heard that conversation and isn't like, yeah, this guy's got a little juice. Very excited.
He's got a great feel for the game.
Yeah.
And that's what Jesse has. To be honest with you guys, like Jesse, you know, we talk about this. Like, Mike, the plays he makes where he comes up and strips a guy, right, and you know, punches the ball out, that's just feel. It's not just I need to make a tackle. It's, all right, third, they're about to get a first down. We're down three. We need a turnover. Like, that's what's going through his mind. This kid thinks the same way. He's the same kind of playmaker.
Right. Allen on the text line goes, why are you loading him up to get angry Georgia fans angry? No, I'm just saying. I mean, look, every Georgia fan who watched that game saw it. They kicked Georgia's butt.
We couldn't believe it.
Now, granted, they couldn't score a lot, but then Georgia made it easy with the damn special team screw up and the touchdown right before the half. I mean, look, that could have been a game that went down to the wire. I think Kirby's, you know, but yeah, in a woulda, coulda, shoulda, Kirby's 21-22 team would have been in that boat. But they were, and Ohio State a couple years ago, maybe they win if Marvin Harrison, like there's the ifs and whats and this and that. Notre Dame was prepared. There's no doubt about it, man. And they were ready for that smoke.
You know what's funny, Mike? Look, what he said, by the way, and this is just getting to the new season and beyond, that's what happens every week with the Dogs. This is why Kirby says they are challenged every week. Every week somebody's telling them, y'all are not tough enough. They think you're tougher than them. And that was what the motivation was. He just said, Marcus Freeman came in there and was like, they think they're bigger and physical than you guys.
Right.
You know?
And it's the kind of stuff that we've seen. Who's the Syracuse coach we just talked about?
Fran.
Coach Fran's got he does the same thing. I mean, I know some says, it's bulletin board, but it works. And the other thing is, remember Michigan, they never got to play Georgia because unfortunately Georgia didn't make it to the Final Four that year. But Michigan was having that Georgia segment of practice where they knew, because Georgia's built a brand of physicality and toughness that resonates around the country. You know, you got to beat them by being more physical.
It's true. And you know, it's funny because Alabama used to do that when Saban was there, and they just push you around, right, and then you get intimidated, and then you lost. And Georgia's doing the same thing, and that's why I think that approach from these coaches, they may not be as talented in some cases across the board as Georgia, but that mindset that Xavier Watts was talking about is interesting. All right, man, we got a lot to dive into. Three great guests to start the hour. All of them are newest Falcons guys. If you missed any of that, go online. Download the app today. You can always rewind and check them out. All right? We talked to Billy Bowman, safety out of Oklahoma, a nickel guy. We had a chance to talk to the big offensive lineman out of Wisconsin, Jack Nelson. And he is big, 6'7". Right. They list him at 315. My guess is he's probably 330. All right? That's my guess. But who knows? And then Xavier Watts, who was the third-round pick, and I think maybe the most impactful guy. I think he's immediately on the field, Mike. I think he starts from day one here and has a chance to make some real impact. But all three intriguing dudes, man.
And a lot of guys hitting us up during the conversations going, oh, I like this guy. Oh, I like this guy. Because it's funny, Crow and I, we were joking around during the conversation. We're saying, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, not to paint with a broad brush, but it's exactly what you expect. Like Jack Nelson, that's exactly what I expect a giant strapping tackle from Wisconsin to sound like. He's got a dad that was a big strapping dude. It looks right now like he's ready for an arm wrestling contest. So, I mean, again, now you got to put the work in. And hopefully, and as I said to you to start the hour, it's really cool with our job to meet these guys and you get them like really right off the tree, you know, and see how their career goes. And hopefully it blossoms here in Atlanta.
We are going to start the show today with one of the guys we've been waiting to talk to. And, of course, Falcon fans have been telling you, we're going to get a chance to talk to all these new rookies. And today, Billy Bowman joins us right off the top, guys, here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We have a lot to get to. We will get to Braves, the debacle with the Celtics last night. All of that stuff we'll get to. But Billy Bowman's on the line. And, Billy, man, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on being drafted by the Falcons. And this whole process, man, let's start there because – when we drafted you in the fourth round, a lot of people around the NFL were like, wow, great pick. They like the skill set you bring. Tell us what you're bringing to the Falcons.
I'm bringing a lot of – well, first and foremost, let me say thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be a Falcon. I'm glad to be here in Atlanta. And it's been nothing but pure blessings and things like that. But I'm bringing definitely that dog side of me. You know, I pride myself on playing defense. I love defense, and I love what the challenges it brings. I just want to go out there and, you know, push myself to the limits and push my teammates to the limits. So just go out there, be a leader, and then be somebody on the field who, you know, will just earn the respect of his teammates. So I'm ready to get this thing kicked off, and you know, I'm just ready to go out there and work with the guys.
Billy, we were reading your bio during the commercial break, and you played wide receiver, man, in Texas. I mean, as a high schooler. So why don't you be a little Travis Hunter for us, man? We get you on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I know. I wish, man. I wish I could have did that in college, too, but I didn't get a chance to. Yeah.
So you played at OU. Talk about this experience, because Brent Venables was there, obviously, at the end for you. But what was that experience like? Because, again, you know, high expectations, big-time program, and then you guys make the transition to the SEC.
Right, yeah. So before I went there, Oklahoma had won 6 in a row conference championships. They went to the college football playoffs 4 times. So, you know, I wanted to be a part of something great. I wanted to be a part of a family atmosphere. And so that's exactly what Oklahoma provided. Although my 4 years there, though, I didn't get any rings, any national championships, conference championships. But that's all good. I don't regret any of it at all, because I think it was all meant to be for a reason. My freshman year was with Coach Lincoln Riley and his staff. And then my last 3 years was with Brent Venables and his staff.
So I just feel like, you know, everything played out how it needed to play out. It definitely brought some challenges. So just getting you prepared for the next level is what it's all about.
And we know Coach Venables from his time at Clemson, and he is, I mean, he's hot crazy, man. You got to keep him on the sideline. Did you pick up stuff? Is it a transition? You were able to learn some stuff from the new staff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a lot. It was more defensive-minded. It was a lot more, you know, learning situational football, you know, just things from what do offenses like to do in the red zone to what they like to do their plays on first and 10 or third and long, the two-minute drill, you know. So just learning the game more. And, you know, obviously, like you said, Brent Venables, yes, he can get crazy at times, but I love it, though. I love every time he does that, and because it just brings back, you know, the focus of the team and things like that. So, yeah.
Falcons defensive back, safety / nickel. I think he's a baller. His name's Billy Bowman, guys. And he's joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. First time we've gotten a chance to chop it up. We'll get a chance to see you up at camp and all the stuff that we'll be a part of up there, Billy. But I want to also ask you about your conversations with Terry Fontenot and our coach Raheem Morris. How soon did you think they might draft you? What were those conversations like? And did you have any inclination that, hey, I'm going to Atlanta?
No, I didn't really. I mean, I had a private workout with Atlanta, and so I definitely felt good about things. You know, I definitely knew that Atlanta had a third-round pick, and you know, I was hoping I would fall there. But, you know, Xavier Watts got taken there, and then, like I said, it's all meant to be for a reason. You know, I'm going to love to play alongside Xavier. And so, you know, me just going in the fourth round, you know, I'm in the door now, but now you got to go knock the door down. So,
right on.
It's a blessing to be here. And I've talked to Coach Morris, and, you know, guy full of energy, always smiling on his face. So it's going to be fun to play for a coach like that.
Yeah, man, you say it. Everybody we talk to plays with this guy, loves him. I think you're going to have a blast. By the way, how did you spend your draft weekend? Were you glued to the TV? How'd you watch it?
Yeah, so no, I had, you know, just immediate family over the first night of the draft, just watching that first round, just, you know, your dream's going to come true. So, you know, just sit down there and watch it. And day two, you know, I was expecting my name to be called on day two. And so, you know, kind of threw something a little big, you know, not too crazy. And then, you know, not going on day two, definitely, you know, swayed my emotions a little bit. You know, the emotions is emotional roller coaster, really, throughout that time. And then day three came, you know, get back, refocus, reengage, and just, you know, just know that my time was coming. And so we had those same people over again. And so it was great to be around all my family and supporters and teammates.
Billy Bowman on the line with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Billy, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, your girlfriend is a world-class softball player, and you guys have been dating for a while. I'm just curious how that has helped you, because I think she's won like three or four national championships. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. She's won four in a row national championships, four in a row All-American seasons, conference player of the year, everything you could think of.
Wow. So how has it helped you? I mean, because she can relate to your journey, right? I mean, you guys, and I don't know, like, how often are you talking sports? Is it all the time? And how has that helped you as a football player?
Yeah, that's helped me a lot. Not just as a football player, but as a person, just having somebody next to you that understands what you go through, because she does it herself also. You know, but we talk sports all the time. We can't get away from sports. So we love sports. We love talking about softball, basketball, football, baseball, you know, anything you could think of. We're sports junkies. But, you know, she is obviously more decorated with the trophies and stuff than I am. But now I got to catch her.
That's awesome, man. If you're just tuning in, guys, it is Billy Bowman from our draft class, guys, fourth round out of Oklahoma here on the WadeFord.com hotline. So you said you talked to the coaching staff. What are the expectations? What do you think they're going to ask you to do?
Not necessarily cleared with that yet, but, you know, whatever I have to do, I'm willing to do it. And so I think I've shown that, you know, throughout my college years, that I'm a guy who's very versatile and very coachable. So whatever needed to be done can get done.
Well, we know you bring the hat. You like the physicality of the game. You're not afraid. Best thing I loved about you, man, like after the day after the draft, you know, you did like a video or whatever, and you're like, I fear nobody.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's we need more of that, Billy.
Yes.
So we know you're a playmaker, man. You consider yourself a ball hawk? I mean, how, you know, when you talk about all those interceptions and making plays like that, we need to create more turnovers on this defense. Is that your forte?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely my forte. I love getting the ball back for the offense. You know, that's something that I've done all my life, really, you know, just being able to find the ball. when it's thrown in the air and go make plays on it. So I'll definitely be bringing that aspect.
All right, man.
We can't wait to see you at camp, man. Good luck.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you so much for joining us, man. We're excited for you. And, bro, let's get to work.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Billy Bowman, guys. Safety, again, he's going to play a lot of nickel for us, but that's what they listed him as, coming out of OU. But, Mike, I think I said this the day we drafted him. They list him at about 5'10", and everybody's like, playmaker, man. Do not get caught up in that. And I think for what we want to use him as and the way that Ra and certainly, you know, Jeff Ulbrich want to use him, he's going to be a playmaker and a guy that helps us create more turnovers. And that's what we needed, Mike. That's why I think they drafted him and obviously Xavier Watts.
And again, can't wait to see these guys. I love this part of the season, getting to hear these guys for the first time, hear what they're all about, their backstory. And again, pure energy, man. And just excitement because, you know, as we said, you don't have to be drafted in the top of the draft to have an impact and become the man. You know, we go back and think about guys that have come through this team, you know, like I mentioned, undrafted guys like, you know, Jesse Tuggle. Sometimes it's a fifth rounder like Grady. So maybe this dude, but you know what, Carl, could be a starter, you know, not just a guy who's going to be, you know, sort of situational in the nickel.
Yeah. And you said it, Mike, excitement. I know sometimes because we've been through the grind as fans is old hat. But I want you to hear when these guys come on, how excited they are to be here and to be a Falcon, how excited they are to be putting that uniform on. And that means something. I mean, like, we just kind of take it for granted. Oh, it's another pick. Man, when these guys come in, you don't think they want to make a difference?
Right.
You don't think they want to win? You don't think they want to change the narrative of whatever it's been here? Oh, they haven't been in the playoffs in forever, man. Good luck. Okay, we're about to change that. So I love the attitude when I hear these young guys come on, Mike, and it's every year. You know, Bijan was that way. We can go back. Penix, first year. Hey, man, I'm just so happy to be here. That's the stuff that you hope grows in the culture within the building, Mike, when you got all these young guys trying to figure it out.
Right. And more importantly, now he comes into a Falcon defense, which has more stuff up front than he would have if he had been drafted last year. So
yeah, that's true.
As we heard the comments from A.J. Terrell with our buddies, the Water Boys, the other day, it's kind of cool to see how these two parts are going to come together because, let's be honest, we've had one without the other for so many years.
Rookie minicamp underway at Flowery Branch. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle! Coming up in 20 minutes, going to open up the phones again on something a little different here. Had a post on social media, I'll talk to Joe about this as well, coming up here, that went pretty viral, if I do say so myself. Hundreds and hundreds of you responding to a simple question. Are you okay with Jalen Walker wearing number 11? We all know whose number that was, and it has been worn a couple of times since, but by the likes of Emory Hunt and Logan Woodside. Not exactly the potential for a generational player like Jalen Walker.
Where is Julio?
Yeah, exactly. Where is Julio? Right now he's sitting on a couch somewhere because he's not playing football anymore, that's for sure. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline and welcome in our buddy Joe Patrick. Joe, before we get into the football aspect of it, how were the vibes at Flowery Branch?
Chris, good to be on. It was great. You know, it's like it's one of those things where it feels like the rite of spring or something. Like it kind of marks the passage of time to get out there on the grass and Flowery Branch for the first time. You know, the weather's warm. You know, because the last time we saw football players out there on that grass, it's, you know, usually in January or something. So it's pretty miserable. And, you know, getting dark early and everything. And now it's, you know, good vibes. Everybody, you know, the sunshine's coming back around. It's nice and warm. The music's pumping. So it's good to be out there. And I think that that's kind of how it feels for a lot of the players, too. I think that, you know, with everything that they go through in the, you know, the pre-draft process with the combine and all that, I think that they're just like, they feel, a lot of them, at least the drafted players, feel maybe not relaxed, but just kind of back at home, kind of being on a team again in that setting.
Okay, so what did they show you at the practice that you were able to watch? What kind of drills were they doing? And did anybody stand out, even just in terms of physical size, maybe not even what they were doing on the field?
Yeah, I mean, what they were doing on the field was extremely minimal. You know, they were doing some, like, skeleton passing drills, but they didn't do any full team 11-on-11 at all. I mean, it's all just in helmets as well. But it was, yeah, 7-on-7s were as much as they did. And even guys like Jalen Walker, James Pierce Jr., those guys didn't even participate in the 7-on-7s. They did some individual work, you know, running around bags. And popping some sleds and stuff, but that was about it. And those two players, as it just so happens with the way the Falcons field is set up, they were kind of the furthest away from where media was. So unfortunately we couldn't even get too close of a look at them, but we did get a close look up at those guys when we talked to them afterwards. And as far as standing out, you know, maybe cliche, but like, you know, James Pierce Jr. would just, his size to me is impressive. And, you know, a lot of the things we heard was about how he's going to need to add weight, you know, playing at a pretty light weight in college. And, you know, that is true, but I got to say, being around him, he does not come across as like a guy where you think, oh, he's got to put on weight. Like, he looks big, he looks strong, and obviously the frame is going to give him, you know, give offensive tackles a lot of problems. So he's the one that physically, he makes Jalen Walker look kind of small when they stand next to each other, which they were for much of the practice.
Raheem Morris with a very interesting comment stating that Jalen Walker should be a future captain for this team. Is that appropriate expectations? Is that slow it down, coach? He hasn't played it down yet. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Raheem is just saying how he truly feels about it, to be honest. You know, whether that is something to put out there in the media on day one, you know, maybe not the most strategic thing, but I don't think Raheem's thinking about it strategically. He's just thinking about the kind of character that Jalen Walker is, and he's totally correct. And when you talk to Jalen, you know, he just has that. It's not like, again, when we talk about like what players are like, and I think what kind of like intangible skills they have, especially with regards to their teammates, it's not about like what they say necessarily. It's just about like the aura, you know, that they kind of put out around them. And you just really feel that around Jalen. He's just, he's got this natural, like infectious attitude, like really like enjoys the game and is passionate about playing football. And I think that just rubs off on people that he's around, whether it's media or his own teammates. And I think that that's really going to be the thing that drives him to be a leader in a lot of the same ways that Michael Penix is. Again, they're not like necessarily rah-rah guys or whatever. Maybe they are. Maybe Jalen is a little bit more of that than Penix is, but both of these guys just naturally, I think, draw people in.
Talking with our good buddy Joe Patrick here, Falcons reporter, insider for Sports Radio 92.9. The game was boots on the ground at Flowery Branch today. When it comes to what's going on with this team off the field, Joe, we keep looking for potential spots that maybe they could spackle something in and maybe add an addition here, an addition there. But Raheem Morris did say today, sort of contrary to that, Joe, that rookies are going to play. So does that make you believe that this team may be done closer to shopping than we may think?
I mean, I guess it depends on what you thought, but like, I wouldn't say that this team where, you know, previous to the draft, I thought that Jalen Ramsey, what there was some potential for, you know, a biggish move like that to be made. Heck, even after the first round, I thought that that was possible, but then based on what they did later, you're right. I mean, it doesn't seem like something like that is on. I don't think that, you know, that precludes them from making some, you know, moves. And obviously every team is going to just kind of be doing, you know, trying to turn the bottoms of their rosters to try to get the most talent on. But I do probably think that that is, for the most part, the extent of what we'll see. Of course, there are some other things like Ryan Neuzel, who is technically not on the roster, but that is very much just a technicality. He will be an Atlanta Falcon. I imagine that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks here at the latest. I think you're right. That, you know, it doesn't seem, and I don't think they want to necessarily have to spend it more money, basically, because money they don't spend, they can use in the form of, you know, restructuring guys or, you know, front-loading contracts, helping the franchise in other ways financially, which they know we know they need because of the hole they put themselves in with the money spent on Kirk Cousins, obviously.
You did speak on Ryan Neuzel, and we had spoke on Monday that the next time you got a chance to speak to Dwayne Ledford, you were going to ask him. Well, you did. What was the full response there? I know you just mentioned that they expect to have him back in the fold, but was there any further explanation as to why? Why is it taking so long?
We didn't really talk about the why. The whys are really much just technicalities on the back end of this thing. But ultimately, he's going to be the starting center for this team. And they really like his power, but, you know, the thing that Dwayne Ledford said that kind of got a smile out of me was that, you know, he said that, I want to quote him accurately here. He said, Ryan Nuzel is one of the best athletes on the team, which is not really what you think about when you picture Ryan Nuzel in your head. he's not the most athletic looking person, but what Dwayne Ledbetter was talking about was that he's just kind of like sneakily like coordinated, honestly, like the hand-eye coordination.
He's essentially the Falcons Abe Gordon. That's what you're saying.
Exactly. Oh, my God. That is absolutely perfect. Yes, he's like a pickleball player. Apparently, he's like the best pickleball player on the team. And I think Bijan Robinson even like owns a pickleball team. So, I think Abe Gordon is a great comparison for what Ryan Nuzel is. And, you know, ultimately, would they like to keep a center around like Drew Dolman? Yeah, but I think that ultimately what Ledford told me was that, you know, with those 8 games that they saw, that was really important because you cannot replicate those kinds types of reps anywhere else. And they saw that he can handle, you know, the real kind of fire that the NFL is going to throw at you at that position.
Ledford also talked about Pierce Jr. jumping off the tape when he was looking at him. What type of instant impact do you think is realistic for this guy? Because a lot is being obviously placed, Joe, and we've talked about it for a couple of weeks now since they've been drafted. Is James Pierce Jr. a type of player that's ready to go right now to be a starter, or is he more of a guy that's going to help out in the rotation, get his opportunities, but not be a down in and down out player? Or is he? I mean, what is your best guess on what you've seen and what you've heard from everybody so far?
So I have to think the Falcons are going to be strategic with the way they deploy him. And I don't want to get out too far out over my skis on, you know, rating the player before we actually see him in pads working against veterans, because that's who he'll be facing down to down in the NFL once the season starts. And I've seen, you know, like a player like Arnold Ebikadi, who, you know, very lauded pass rusher coming into the draft. And then you could see, like, in some of the opening practices, I remember, because they were some of my first covering the team, like, he was just having trouble with McGarry's frame and size and strength. It's just, like, something I feel like he had not really had to deal with at the college level. And so, for that reason, I want to kind of, like, put that warning out about James Pierce Jr. You never know if he's going to really have some of those struggles. But I got to say, man, he's exciting. And what prompted Ledford to start talking about him jumping off the tape was Ledford was wearing a hat that said speed off the ball. And that's, you know, kind of like correlating that to James Pierce Jr., which is what he basically said he does. He was asked what his, you know, preferred pass rush move is. And I loved his answer because, you know, this is like, you know, typically, you know, you might get a, you know, oh, I like the club, or I like, you know, this move or that move. He goes, I'm coming with speed. I don't know what after that, but I know I'm winning. And that to me is like such an alpha thing to say, and something that you wouldn't say if you didn't actually have confidence in yourself to be able to do it. And so I love that response. And he talked about how important his get off was. I asked him, like, I told him, your get off is already incredible. That's something you continue to work on. He's like, that is get off and hands I'm working on all the time. I'm just looking to get better.
All right, Joe, they're in Chicago, big game, 2:30 kick. Do they get it done? And I'm talking about the 5 stripes.
Yeah, I know. I mean, listen, I don't know how anyone's hopes could really be high at this point. They've really shown no evidence that they will be able to turn things around. The only thing that our hopes are really pinned on at this point is kind of the theory that this team should be good, the theory that they've spent a lot of money on players and those players – could reward you, but so far they haven't. And like, you know, none of them, well, I shouldn't say Emmanuel Lattai-Lott has been worth, I think, what you said, and you've gotten what you hoped you would out of him. But with Alexei Marinchuk and Miguel Almiron, I gotta say it, like, Miguel Almiron has just not performed to the level I think a lot of people thought he would when, you know, he came back for $12 million. And it's frankly a level that's so far below what he was when he was here the first time. I think it's hard for people to like really come to terms with that. The touches have just been poor, and that's what really alerts me, Chris, is it's like the first touch. It's not necessarily the speed. You kind of expected him to be a step slower, and he is, but it's the fact that he just seems like a sloppier player overall at this point, and just the amount of giveaways doesn't allow this team to have possession and do the things that the coach, Ronnie Dyla, wants them to do. And it's not just Miguel. It's, you know, other players as well. Sabo Lochinidze has had a poor season so far. so many players you could rattle off. And that's what's really worrying about this team, is that you could just kind of go through the names of players who have disappointed so far. And for that reason, it's hard to just see it turn around. But at the same time, Chris, I feel like you got to think at some point it will. We just won't see it coming.
Joe, I hope so, man. I want to talk to you on Monday.
That's the best I can offer.
I want to talk to you on Monday about a win, man. It's been way too long. But right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Ovi Mihaly, former Atlanta Falcon fullback, now a great podcast for the Believe Network, Believe in Falcons with Michael Turner. Ovi, appreciate the time. I want to start here with you. A lot has been made of the pick to trade back up into the first round and take James Pierce Jr. What did you think of that move? Do you think they gave up too much, or do you think it was a good move for the Falcons?
It was a great move. Not even a good move. It was a great move because Terry probably knows that this is a year to put up or shut up. And if we have been so bad in one area for so long and you're not doing everything you can to make sure if we lose, we're not losing this way, then you failed. And Terry doesn't do failure very well. So I think it's great. It is a lot. I would rather not be a first-round pick for next year, but they probably won't be here next year if they don't get this right. So I think he did what's in his best self-interest, and I'm hoping that these two absolute dogs that we got are going to make things happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's much to do about nothing, and it's a lot of these national people, Ovi, that you know that aren't here every day following the team and doing what's right for them. All right, want to ask you, pick your brain as a former player. If you were dealing with what the Falcons were dealing with Kirk Cousins right now, and it looks like, unless something crazy happens, he's going to start the season as the backup quarterback, barring, you know, another team getting injured and needing somebody to come in. How would you handle that as a player? Is it much to do about nothing, just keep it moving, or do you think this has a chance to put a fracture into the locker room?
It would only put a fracture in the locker room if Kirk is just a jerk about it. You know, Kirk could easily, with all of the knowledge, with all of the expertise, all the experience he has in understanding how difficult it is for a rookie QB, not really a rookie, but, you know, pretty much, a first full season QB to get everything right and to deal with the ups and downs and to train to be the guy and all the pressure in the media. He knows how hard it is. And if he wanted to just be like a jerk about it, he could kind of just pick at that scab and do that undercover passive aggressive foolishness that unfortunately I've had to deal with. I'm in D.C. right now for a conference, and it's funny because Baltimore is right down the way, and I'm getting all types of nostalgia when I flew into Baltimore to play with the Ravens, and I was a third-string fullback. Now, mind you, there aren't even teams with one fullback, so right. To be a third-string fullback, yeah. I was behind Alvin Card and Harold Morrow, and you know, those guys kind of made it difficult for me because they're like, man, there's not a room for one fullback, much less three, and so they knew all the little ways to make things kind of difficult. If Kirk was that, it'd be a big issue. Lucky for us, Kirk's not that guy. Kirk Cousins is somebody, as far as I know, I don't know him personally. I've met him a couple of times. We've spoken. I've seen the Netflix quarterback special. I've heard from people who do have firsthand knowledge with him, including some certain Falcon players. He's not the type of individual that would make it about him, that would cause a stir, even if he is disgruntled and, you know, probably has some right to be, some right not to be. That's a whole other interview about Kirk Cousins and what he did and didn't do. But no, as a former player in that locker room, as long as Kirk does his job, supports the starting quarterback, should be no issue.
How much, just again, pulling from your personal insight here, how much work has Michael Penix done since the third to last week of last year, coming up now into his first full training camp as QB1? In terms of learning the playbook and mastering an offense, tell our audience about how crazy that process could be, especially for a quarterback.
Oh man, it's tough for me, for running back. When I joined the Falcons and learning not just what the fullback does, but I had to learn what the tight ends do. I had to learn the routes for the receivers. I had to learn the blocking schemes for the offensive line to make sure I'm inserting the right way. I had to learn even some third down protection stuff in case our two tailbacks went down. So it was a lot of work just for me. For a quarterback, it's just like stacks and stacks and stacks of audibles and kills and formations and the amount of information that he has to download and the ability to make it just second nature to recall, it's so much work. But again, it's something he should be used to because colleges and I think pro teams now have been pushing a quarterback-driven league, five wides and let's go. So he's used to it, but it's something to where as a backup, you train hard, you're ready to be the guy. But when you know you're the guy, there is zero room for error. They expect you absolutely to be on top of your game all the time. And frankly, not just the coaches and the fans, at teammates. We expect him as QB. If you're leading this team, you're running things, you have to be able to – I don't want to hear this, oh, rookie mistake. I don't want to hear, oh, like he's getting used to things. Now you're the guy. We expect you to be at your best because we're not losing – or we shouldn't be losing games because you forgot to play or you got confused. There's no time for that, especially with our starving fan base that's ready for us to win now.
Talking all things Falcons with former Falcon fullback and Pro Bowler Ovi Mihaly here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Make sure you check out his podcast on the Believe Network with Michael the Burner Turner. When it comes to the quarterback, you've played around a lot of good ones and you've also seen a lot of bad ones. What is the key factor or two that separates, obviously other than physical skill, but what is it that makes up the difference between the guys that you've been around that have been elite and the guys that have struggled?
I would think the ability to recover when things do go wrong, because even with the best of them, I play, like you said, with future Hall of Famers like Matt Ryan, even though I still feel like, you know, the city didn't do Matt Ryan right. Too many times I'm leaving games and I'm in Kroger and people say, oh, that Matt Ryan, you know, his arm's getting weak, he's getting old, he can't do this, can't do that. I'm like, Matt Ryan on his worst day is better than a lot of the quarterbacks that we saw. And when we had the Desmond Ridders of the world, we had the Marcus Mariotas, people realized that, hey, Matt's not that bad now. All that talk for Matt Ryan ain't that bad. But what I loved about Matt was that I was there in the huddle with Matt Ryan. I mean, sorry, with Mike Turner and Julio and Roddy and Tony Gonzalez and all of these guys. And we're in like these crunch moments and it's the fourth quarter and we're down by a lot. And, you know, Matt just threw an interception. He's down on himself, but his ability to snap back and to not only be 1,000% confident that we're going to win this game, but to have so much belief that it spills over into us, and not just the belief, but he's putting in the work, the effort. You can see him digging for every yard. You can see him running, even though he ain't the best scrambler. He's, you know, wobbling like a baby giraffe and out there running and juking and diving head first. Like, he has that dog, that fight, and that short memory to where he's able to not just, you know, oh, man, sorry, guys, and dwell on that stuff. So I think a short memory and the ability to recover quickly, like quickly, you don't have time to have a couple of plays that you're feeling sorry for yourself. Quarterbacks who can do that will do much better than the ones who don't know how to learn that skill.
You mentioned Tony Gonzalez in your last answer there, and Kyle Pitts is certainly not Tony Gonzalez, Ovi, but he certainly has potential. With Michael Penix at the helm, contract year, do you foresee him being more like the rookie Kyle Pitts that we saw, or do you think the cat's out of the bag for this one?
No, I still got faith in Kyle Pitts because, just like Kirk Cousins said, I didn't forget how to play quarterback. I think Kirk will go somewhere and do well, and I think Kirk, if not for the injury, could still be a very good quarterback. Kyle Pitts, same thing, and he's younger. He's got a lot of incentives, a lot of you know, dollar signs and commas and reasons for him to have the best season of his career. And I've seen it. I've been there on the field and watched guys who their contract year, all of a sudden they're working out a little harder. Their contract year, all of a sudden they're staying a little bit later catching balls. Their contract year, all of a sudden, they're in the film room like crazy, trying to get every single ounce of an advantage that they can. That contract year is real. It's serious. Like I did it myself. I worked hard every year in my career. My fourth year with the Baltimore Ravens, my contract year, I think I like tripled everything I was doing. Kyle Pitts, from what I've heard and what I've seen, he's putting the work in. The people who are around Kyle Pitts are saying that they've never seen him work this hard. And I think that he's motivated knowing that he has a 100% stud in Michael Penix as a quarterback to where there are no excuses. There are no, oh, I didn't get the ball, quarterback can't get the ball to me, you know, doesn't have the arm strength. No, all Kyle Pitts has to do is what he did years ago. And if you're supposed to get better every single year in the NFL, he's more experienced. He knows what to do, how to train. This is his year. So I have a Kyle Pitts jersey that the Falcons sent to me. I work with a great nonprofit community in schools, and we had a gala, and I asked the Falcons to send me a jersey. He sent me a Kyle Pitts jersey. I'm like, all right, this is a sign. I got a signed Kyle Pitts jersey. We're going to, you know, auction it off to raise some money for these kids. And this is Kyle's year. So I'm hoping he comes back and has that Pro Bowl season because we could definitely use it. And I know he definitely wants it to happen.
Not to sound too professorial here, Ovi, but we need a eulogy, not an effigy. That's what we need for Kyle Pitts this season. If the season started tomorrow, Tampa or the Falcons to take the NFC South?
Ooh. If the season started tomorrow, would we take the NFC South? I say yes. I mean, we had it last year. And the only thing different, well, a couple things different, I think having better defensive ends, guys who can rush the quarterback, and having a quarterback that I think can be just as good as Kirk Cousins, if not better, with that youth and that scrambling ability. It's not Michael Vick, doesn't need to be, but the fact that he can move more than Kirk, I think that we can definitely win the NFC South. I don't know if we'll run away with it, but I like our odds.
Yeah, I think it's ultimately going to come down to those two teams again. Although I will say, what do you think of what the Panthers are doing? Because I'm not going to lie. I mean, between the way that they thumped the Falcons at the end of the season last year and the offseason moves, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be better than the Falcons or the Bucs, but I kind of like the direction they're headed in, Ovi.
No, I mean, if you're a Panthers fan, I'm from Charleston, South Carolina, so I got a lot of friends and family who are Panthers fans. You should be encouraged. They're definitely moving in the right direction. Their young quarterback, despite being undersized, he's good enough to beat us and beat other teams that were supposedly much better than him. So they're moving in the right direction, but they don't have enough firepower or sustained talent, I think, to give Tampa Bay or us a run for their money. But we cannot overlook them any game at any time, because if we play – even a mediocre game, they'll come out and beat us. So I do not want any Panthers losses on our schedule this year, but I do realize that Carolina's getting better.
The Falcons, before I let you go, with the schedule release coming out next week, there is a chance that they have an international game. If you've ever played in one, let us know your experience. And if not, what would you imagine, knowing what it's like getting ready for a regular game week? How different and how much more stressful is it to play overseas?
I was so close to playing an international game. The year that they retired, no one retires. Like Peyton Manning retires. Jerome Bettis retires. The rest of us, we get kicked out.
Yeah.
So the year the NFL decided they didn't want Ovi Mahaley anymore, the Falcons cut me because I was, you know, good thing, bad thing. I was a high state fullback in the league at the time. And they were like, oh, we can pay you, or we can pay a rookie like 1/30th of what we're paying you. So I had a little injury and they did that. But I went to the Rams, did their training camp, was so excited because the Rams in 2012 were going to play an overseas game. And so I was already making my plans and all that good stuff. And Jeff Fisher decided that at the end of training camp, I won the fullback job, but he decided Steven Jackson didn't need a fullback. So that was the closest I came to traveling overseas. And I still kept in close contact to the guys, and they told me it was an amazing experience, but it takes a lot of discipline to be able to prepare your body to not only make that trip and acclimate to the change, but to just stay focused when you have so many chances to go to new restaurants and see new people and be a real tourist, because there's not a high chance we'll be back in that area very soon because it's overseas. So it's no different than a regular game. It's just a lot more distractions, a lot more opportunities to make the wrong decision, and these professionals should be just that, professional. So hopefully the Falcons do get one. Hopefully they bring me on that trip, and I get a chance to redo my away game international experience.
Well, I will say this. The way that Tyler Allgeier runs the ball, I'm sure you can have a few pointers for him. He runs like a fullback.
No, that guy's a beast. I got a chance to connect with Tyler, Rally on the Runway. The Falcons did the charity event with the Rally team that does great work with pediatric cancer. And me and Tyler were sitting there. And every time I see Tyler, I'm like, man, you and Mike T would be, man, it'd be thunder and thunder in the backfield. I was blocking for you guys. I like, love the way the guy runs. You know, wish he had more opportunities, but, you know, sharing the ball with Bijan. Bijan's an amazing talent. And Tyler Allgeier, he's somebody to where we got to, like the, what's it, whoever the Falcons voice is, give the ball to Tyler. Give the gosh darn ball to Tyler, man. That guy is a beast.
Yeah, Ovi, appreciate the time. As always, my friend, we'll chat soon, and we'll be hearing you on the Believe Network, the Believe in Falcons podcast. Thanks, man.
No problem. Thanks.
Afternoon to our man, Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl NFL champion. And B-Mac, of course, did that with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Guys, he's been the talk of this week. And B, you did an excellent job. Let's give you some props right now. Visiting with our quarterback and Michael Penix, let's talk about this because there's so much Mike and I were curious about in this interview process where you had a chance to just kind of chop it up with him. And Mike said it. The best part was that you guys were at Waffle House. Let's start first. What are your impressions just being around him? Forget about the questions. We'll get into some of that. Just being around the dude, what did you think?
Man, Mike is a great guy, man. A great guy. If you don't have a dog in the race in terms of what team you root for or cheer for as individual players, if you're in his presence, you root for him. You know what I mean? The humility that stands in front of him is felt. It's felt. He's a good dude. And I love being around good dudes. The same can be said for you guys. You just want to be around good, genuine, authentic people, nice people, man. And he is the definition of that. You know what I mean? With him being in this position, being a former top 10 pick, of course, QB1 for a organization here in Atlanta, he doesn't carry himself as that. He acts like he's a normal individual, individual that's not one of the best players and best quarterbacks in his class. He doesn't act like a player who is a starter. He's just a good dude, man, and I really appreciate him spending time with me and just how authentic he is.
Yeah, I mean, it's legitimate. I mean, we've talked about other guys in the league, and not to name names, Russell Wilson. Sometimes you try to take that mantle of leadership, Bryant, but I mean, he was a captain at Washington because he's got that sort of quiet confidence, but he just gets the job done. By the way, we love when you were breaking down what we thought was the play that shows he belongs in the NFL, and that was the touchdown throw to Pitts in the red zone against the Commanders. Talk about that because that was some great audio.
And you know, the same thing, how you guys felt. I felt like that was the best play that I watched personally from Penix during that four-game stretch when he was starting. Because, you know, that was a highly anticipated game with him being the starter. His relationship with the quarterback for Washington and Jaden Daniels and the back-and-forth affair. And that was a crucial clutch-type moment, you know, for Michael. He actually turned into Jalen Brunson in that play and made it. And just his ability, and I wanted to ask him about the above the game, above the shoulder part, being able to dissect and know exactly where he's going through football before the play is actually in movement. And he broke it down nicely, and just his ability, as I stated during that interview, just manipulating the backer, making the backer move. That is a veteran strategy for a veteran quarterback, manipulating the backer with your eyes, knowing exactly where you're going to go with the football, and, of course, trusting your pass catcher to have a rhythm in place for him to be exactly where he needs to be, because that was a time and throw. He didn't throw to Kyle Pitts. He threw to an area that he knew Kyle Pitts was going, and that was great. And like you said, that was one of the best throws. I mean, he made some big-time throws in that game against Carolina in the Dome, but that throw for me, because of the situation, was unbelievable.
B, I saw you tried to put him on the spot. We played that soundbite yesterday where you were like, so would we have been a playoff team if you started? Look, I thought he gave the politically correct answer, but as Mike and I said, you know, wouldn't it have been something if he was like, yeah, they should have put me in earlier? But that's not his nature, right? That's not who he is. But I thought it was a great question to kind of pose to him because we've all wondered, all right, do you think you would have made a difference? And by the way, we're not talking about the entire season. We're talking about once Cousins started to suck.
Yeah, and you know, before I asked that question, guys, I already knew the answer I was going to get from Mike because I know who he is, right? So that was predictable. I knew exactly what he was going to say, which he's a respectful, humble individual. But I wanted to ask that question because I hear people talking in the streets. You know, I talk to you guys all the time. I hear what you guys are saying. And there are a lot of fans that feel like, man, if we would have made that move maybe 2 weeks prior, who knows what the team would have looked like at the end in terms of playoff aspirations. So I wanted to ask a question that fans have talked about in barbershops, in salons, in restaurants, at bars. Man, if they would have did X, Y, and Z. Because to your point, Kirk Cousins wasn't playing at his best, and now we found out after the fact he wasn't even healthy. Think about that.
Right.
Wasn't healthy. So for a guy like Michael Penix, when he became the starter, all the marbles at that time were in the middle of the table because of the bad stretch the team was currently in the midst of. So he walked into a very, very pressure situation where the kitchen was already hot. And they didn't have no stove fans available to kind of circulate some air in there. And he had to stand up in that kitchen and cook. And he tried to. But because of the timing of the season where they were, you had no room for error and the error surfaced. So I felt like me personally, the same thing could be said for you guys. If they would have made that move a little earlier, who knows how much more acclimated Penix would have been to the offense, which would have resonated points, of course, which would resonate wins.
It's Brian McFadden, guys. BMAC, you can check it. We all put the link up at Put 'Em Up. C. Duke to the Mike Bell ATL to catch his conversation with Michael Penix Jr. And now that everything's done, the dust is settled. I know we've asked you a million times about Kirk Cousins. Did you, off the record? I mean, great question, Michael. Off the record, I mean, he's prepared to handle all the controversy if Kirk Cousins is still here, right, in August?
No question, man. I think the unique thing about Penix, even though he's a rookie, he's highly mature. The maturation process that he's been dealing with throughout his collegiate career has been well documented. You know, being around college ball for such a long time, having the microphone in his face for such a long time, I think he's ready to handle that. But honestly, guys, I don't think there will be a lot in terms of Kirk Cousins' questions with Penix. Because I think it's safe to say everyone who's involved in the Falcon organization, everyone who is involved in the NFL world, the landscape, they already know who the main man is. There's no quarterback competition. The only thing that I think, me personally, would allow Kirk Cousins to be more in the forefront if injury was to happen to Michael Penix. But when you draft a guy top 10, and when you make him the starter in the end of his rookie year, you're basically telling all of us, we're not turning him away. He's our guy. And I think Penix understands that, but he also welcomes the competitive atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But he understands this is his job to lose. As long as he stays healthy and stay the course, he'll be fine.
BMAC, what did you learn in this interview that you didn't think you knew about this young man?
Well, you know, Michael Penix is a Florida guy just like I am. I did not know Michael Penix, once upon a time, when he was a young lad in Tampa, had 16 goals in his mouth. In
what?
Dreadlock.
Really?
Yes. He said he had 8 to the top, 8 to the bottom. Of course, they were pullouts, but they were real goal, 100% goal, 14 cake. And he showed me a picture in his phone when he was at Indiana at that time with the wigs, the dreadlocks in his head, and a mouthful of gold teeth. And I said, Penix, if I didn't know anybody, I thought you were playing safety or backer because you did not look like a quarterback. But that's the thing I love about Penix, man. He's the ultimate professional, but he also has a little edginess to him. You know what I mean? I love quarterbacks that got a little fire in the belly. But you don't hear the fire. You see it. You feel it. And that's the unique thing about his ability to be able to adjust and show different personalities when need be. And that also gravitates the locker room towards him because now you know he's one of the guys.
Right. Brian McFadden is
with
us.
And also, too, the last thing, he's super cheap.
He's frugal.
Thrifty.
Thrifty. Yeah. Michael Penix ain't a Saks Fifth Avenue guy. He more J.C. Penney.
Oh, okay.
Well, remember, he was getting a hot dog at Walmart or Costco when he found out he was getting a start, which is kind of cool.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's frugal, man. Yeah. He going to make sure he save a buck, which I appreciate. But, you know, no knock on J.C. Penney, by the way, for all our J.C. Penney listeners out there. But, you know, Saks Fifth and J.C. are a little two different areas. You know, Mike, he can go to Saks. You know he got the bread to do so, but he just chooses to go to JCPenney. Or back in the day, I know my aunt used to like shopping at Cato, while our older listeners on there. You remember the store Cato?
Yes.
Yeah. Shouts out to Cato, by the way. I know they closed down years ago.
Yeah, B-Max, too, he's too young for Zares down in Florida, where I got my first bike. All right, man. B-Max with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. The way the team is configured, obviously the focus on the defense, they did add a guy that was a record breaker as far as wide receivers, undrafted free agent, Nick Nash, kind of cool. So maybe we get a slot guy. But you think Pitts evolves this year in this offense with Penix?
He has to. He has to. And the thing that I anticipate seeing from from Kyle Pitts, number one, he has to have a clean slate of health, right? That's been an issue with him. The inability to stay on the football field, being healthy. Number two, we're already hearing, you know, the coaches offensively saying they are expecting big things from Kyle Pitts. So with that being told to all of us, they're going to try to feature him in the passing game. They're going to give him one more last opportunity to show his worth here in Atlanta. And if you're Kyle Pitts, you know you got to deliver. You were a former top 10 pick at the tight end position. And when he was drafted at that position, he came into the league with more hype, more anticipation than what we saw from Brock Bowers. Think about it. When you look at what Kyle Pitts did at Florida, now he didn't have the collegiate career at Florida like Brock did at Georgia.
Right.
But what he did during the pre-draft process, running that fast 40, the athleticism, I mean, he came into the league like the next great one. And clearly he hasn't delivered to that level yet. So I'm hoping Kyle can stay healthy first and foremost. But it's time to live up to the potential, guys, because he's one of the more athletic presence at the tight end position that we have in the National Football League. Unfortunately, we just haven't seen that maturate like we thought it would be. And especially if he can do what he needs to do, just think about how much better Michael Penix can be if you got reliable tight end production to rely on.
All right, don't think you're going to get out of here and not get asked this question. What you think? What's going on? You already know. What you think going on with these Steelers, man? What's going on with the Steelers?
Man, they broke my heart, man. Man, listen, man, they broke my heart, man. George was my guy. Now, I understand George had some other things going on off the field that we heard about. But for me, the most confusing part, guys, is the timing of that move. Like, and we're hearing that they were willing to trade. They wanted to trade George Pickens. So if that's the case, why don't you trade him before the draft so whatever pick you can get in return could actually help the team this year? But instead, you do it, and now the pick you won't even see any benefits from the pick in 2025. So that was the most confusing thing for me. But you know, clearly Mike Tomlin, they have a plan in place, and we got to see how it actually works out.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's a long history of troubled wide receivers. And as I said on Twitter, what could possibly go wrong with an immature wide receiver down in Dallas? You know, seeing what CeeDee Lamb is making. I'm not sure if he's going to play with Metcalf, but yeah, I just don't know. I mean, how Arthur Smith pivots, what kind of guys they're going to bring into camp to try to, you know, beef up that wide receiver room. It's a little weird. But now, hey, you know what? Maybe, Brian, the light goes on for Pickens and realizes these guys, they quit on me because they figure I got to get my head on straight. And finally he does.
Exactly. And I said that maybe this actually could become a good thing for George Pickens because you need to mature. You know, when he got drafted, there were some issues concerning his behavior while he was at UGA, right? He got drafted in the second round, even though he was a first-round talent because of the injury and also the behavior concerns. And he went to Pittsburgh, and some of those things followed him where they did tolerate the extra, but they got tired of seeing the extra week in and week out, so they made him expendable. So now George, he's fortunate. Number one, he got drafted to another storied organization where he's going to be in the spotlight. That's the first thing. Number two, he got drafted actually in a better quarterback situation than his current spot, his past spot in Pittsburgh. So if you're George Pickens, you can ask for another, a better second opportunity than what he currently is about to embark in. And he's playing alongside another all-pro, an all-pro in CeeDee Lamb. So this has to open his eyes, and if it does, this can actually change the trajectory of the Dallas Cowboys, especially offensively.
Great stuff. Bryant McFadden, two-time Super Bowl champion. Steve Coonan, do you think Draymond Green is drawing these technicals because there is an agenda? Okay, don't answer that. How are you, sir? How are you doing?
I'm good. That's an interesting question.
It is, right. Because Draymond was upset after, you know, drawing another tech where he's like, there's an agenda. They're making me out to be this crazy guy. Mike, he kind of is, isn't he? I mean, that's how Draymond acts sometimes.
Yeah, and I know that race got into it on some of the ESPN shows and other guys. But, I mean, to me, it doesn't have to be racial. It can be just Bill Laimbeer was a jerk. Draymond is a jerk.
You can be crazy.
I mean, sometimes he goes a little cuckoo. Rodman was that way. But Laimbeer, if you want to make it a white guy thing so you can compare and contrast, you know, you don't have to go down that road. I think he gets caught up in the emotion. It's almost like, and Steve, I know because I've been that guy too from time to time. You want unhinged? I'll give you unhinged.
I actually think it's all part of his plan. I think he wants people to think he's unhinged.
Right. Mm.
And I think he's trying to take people out of their game. And I think the Pistons, the Bad Boys, are a beautiful analogy to this. I think everything Draymond does is calculated. I think he's incredibly bright. I think he knows what he's doing. I also think he gets away with more than any player in the league. Mm. I mean, I think it was game one. They showed a close-up of him just F-bombing the ref. Nuts. And then we see Trey, who makes a look at somebody, and he's out of the game.
It's true. This is true. Now, Steve Koonin, you're right about that, because that's the issue that I have. And then when he stands up to say something, it's like, oh, he's being disrespectful. Are you serious? Like, are you watching Luka? Are you watching Draymond? I totally agree with you. Steve Koonin, Hawk CEO. All right, let me ask you this, because this is how I feel. And look, if you're a casual NBA fan and this is the time that you watch, these games have been entertaining. These playoffs have been. Who had the Knicks up in their series? Who had Indiana up on Cleveland? Like, this has been fun.
Both of those series combined have had 3 20-point fourth quarter comebacks. That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. So I don't know what's going on, but it's kind of, why are the teams in the lead falling apart like that? Well, what did the Knicks outscore them, like 38-19 in the fourth quarter and beat the Celtics at home?
Yeah. I mean, look, right. the comebacks by the Knicks, and here's the thing. To say that the Celtics are the better team, do I feel like they are? Yeah. But they haven't won these games. It comes down to these clutch plays, and it felt like the Celtics right now, they're just tight.
You know, even though we're family radio, I think the sphincter tightens for the Knicks starting tomorrow.
Oh.
Because you go back to Boston tied 2-2, you're not going to win this series.
No, you're right.
The Knicks have to win at least one. Have to.
But I just think, honestly, Tatum, we know he's a star and one of the highest, if the highest paid guy in the league, if not. But it's just sometimes I wonder from a leadership standpoint. We joked around about LeBron famously years ago in Cleveland with Dave Blatt, the coach from Israel, going, no, he drew up a play. I squashed it. I just like to see somebody at Boston go, you know, coach, we can get to the rack. We don't have to settle for 3-point shots. And it kind of, the larger picture, maybe, Steve, it'll be a reckoning for all the stupid analytics nonsense, which drives some people crazy of the regular season games of end-to-end clanging three.
Yeah, and I also think Tatum might be hurt worse than we thought in the Orlando series. He hurt his wrist, and if you remember, I think missed game three. So he might have a little hitch in his giddy up. And then, you know, when Anthony Edwards went down last night, I was like, oh, no, Steph and Edwards out. No. So I'm hoping. I don't know how you come back from a hamstring. I don't know how you play till you're 37 years old and have never pulled a hamstring before. I've pulled my hamstring getting into the car. So, you know, it's kind of remarkable. But if Steph doesn't come back, that series is probably over.
How are you guys viewing? Mike just was talking to me about the draft lottery. We got a 3%, you know, chance of getting that first pick. But for those folks.
No, we don't.
Well, right.
No. That's wrong.
Well,
if Sacramento gets the first pick, we don't get the pick.
Right.
I was going to explain that.
Please, Steve.
But
no,
I was going
to.
No.
Bad.
I was going to say, Hawks currently have 2 first round picks.
If.
But yes, but no chance for the first pick in the draft.
Okay.
No chance this year.
The pick
best
is
we
gonna,
can be is 13th.
The pick is going to head to the Spurs. That's part of the compensation. One of them, at least.
Which is 14th.
Right, which is DeJounte Murray. The other pick, right, is from the
Sacramento?
Kings for the Kevin Herter deal. And so
correct.
As we lay this out, just saying, that's why when you read this and you see it, guys get, oh, man, we got a chance. So say that again, Steve, so everybody's clear. The lowest
so the
we could pick.
Protections with Sacramento were 1 through 12. They retained the pick. Until the lottery's held Monday night, nobody has the official draft order. Sacramento has a 3% chance of it landing in the top four. And if they do, we don't get the pick, and it reverts to second-round picks next year, which is not what we want.
No, that's not.
We have a 97% chance of that conveying to us, and that's what we want.
Okay. So, and if that happens, then we would pick at what? At least right
13th
now.
13th and 22nd is what the statistics say we have a 90-plus percent chance of doing.
Okay.
So 13th and 22nd. 22nd being the Lakers pick via New Orleans.
And we package that and go get Zion.
Steve, by the way, as an NBA official, not a referee, but a guy who works in the league, he can't comment, Carl, on other players in the roster.
My bad. I'm sorry.
And by the way,
because that's what fans keep telling me.
If we bring why?
That's what they keep telling me.
You guys, stop talking about Zion again. If we're going to get him here, he's going to miss 50 games a year. Steve, don't comment on this. But, I mean, it's a waste of time.
Don't worry.
It's amazing how people just fixate on the names. Yeah. You know, the names. Yeah. Like, I get it. When he's healthy, the production is great, but he's never healthy.
Well Mike, I'm sorry. I apologize. We're going to package those picks and go get Kevin Durant. What?
Yes. No, that's.
This is the other thing I keep hearing.
No, we actually have
What people need to understand in the NBA, you have to trade equivalent salaries.
Right.
So two picks have zero salary attached to them. Kevin Durant is $56
million.
So. Well, that would be some fine draft pick.
There's a tall guy in Minnesota and a tall guy on Indiana. And one guy has a player options, but I would love to see some height. You know, a five. We can talk about that, Steve. I would love to see a rim protector and then, you know, give double O just kind of play the four.
That probably will be much more realistic in free agency and trades with hopefully some help from the draft. But. Yeah. Again, I don't see another rookie breaking into our starting lineup, but hey, you never know.
No, it's a great point. All right, Steve Kuhn and Hawks CEO, we got about 90 seconds here left with you. We get a chance to talk to him each and every week, guys, throughout the offseason, because really the NBA, like the NFL, doesn't stop. We're talking about the draft lottery. We'll be talking about the draft before you know it, the NBA finals all the way through, and then the offseason gets very interesting. There is no other league, including the NFL, that has more movement than the NBA. And you're going to see it again this offseason, which gets us to, you know, the question Mike's talking about. Where are we in our search for a new president of basketball ops?
So we have had 9 interviews over the past 2 weeks. And one of the things you have to understand is, like, why is it taking so long? Well, if you want to speak to somebody who is with another team, you have to get permission. Remember, these other 29 teams are our partners. You don't just go raiding their roster of people.
Okay.
Number one, if you want to talk to people who are still in the playoffs, usually they'll say you can have permission to talk, but it's after the playoffs. We're making real progress. We've met some really interesting people. We've had some great conversations. Everyone is enamored with these three young wings that we have, and Dyson, Zachary, and Jalen Johnson. And so there have been real fruitful conversations, but, you know, we've got to do it right. And there's a lot of people we want to talk to who won't be available for a few days or so, possibly a week or two. So that's as transparent and honest as I can be.
All right. So as we said, we've talked about it. I mean, again, I could put words in Steve's mouth, but talk to some guys from some teams who've done some interesting things quickly and have found the right pieces, and they've done it, you know, and because, you know, the old knock, Steve, was if you don't get it right, the Sixers, the process, it just seems like it could take a decade to get it right. So we're hopefully getting the right guys in here because we've got a core.
We're not rebuilding.
No, we've got a core.
We're not rebuilding.
Right. And no, you're just going to accentuate the positive.
Exactly. Do you want to sing that song together?
You got you know to that song accent. Come on, Carl. Straight the positive. No deal. Miss the negative.
There you go.
It's a good song, too.
Right on.
Steve Kuhnin. Thank you.
Lyricist.
Next week, we sing Woody Guthrie with Steve Kuhnin.
Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you soon, guys. And by the way,
happy Mother's Day to everybody.
Yes, right absolutely. On. You too. Your wonderful wife as well. Thank you, Steve.